I'm not one for big parties. And I'm certainly not one for dancing. But right now, I could get really excited by the prospect of, you know, a huge wedding reception. You know, tons of people, everyone joyful, mingling among the crowd, two-cheek kissing everyone you meet. Yeah, that's two-cheek kissing. I'm going to miss that. Imagine the wedding, this huge wedding reception with lots of hugs as old friends reunite, as new friendships start, as when families coming together, you know, the cheesy toasts, the course after course of great food, someone having a little too much wine, the band playing all the standard wedding songs, and maybe even some dancing. I don't like big crowds, but in times like this, I could get lost just thinking about that type of a huge wedding reception. In the book of Revelation, John has a vision of heaven in which he sees it as a wedding feast. It's the biggest wedding reception you can imagine. And this heavenly wedding is Jesus marrying his bride, the church. That's what heaven is. Jesus and the church intimately uniting themselves. Today, we begin part two of our preaching series called Re-Church, regarding church. And last week, I asked you to think or to rethink the idea of church, what it is and what it means to you. And this week, I want to talk about what and how we rebuild when we talk about that church. You know, that image of the wedding feast of the Lamb means that you can encounter Jesus, but you cannot have an ongoing relationship with Jesus without the church. Think about your best friend. You know, your best friend in the whole wide world. How real is that relationship with that person if you can't talk about your spouse? If you can't share some of the joys and the struggles that you have with your family? To really know you, they have to know the people you care about deeply. Jesus isn't any different. If you want an ongoing relationship with Jesus, he's going to want you to know and be part of his family, the church. And so this week, when I talk about what we want to rebuild, I'm not talking about buildings. The buildings haven't gone anywhere these past couple of months. But St. Peter, the one chosen by Jesus to be the first leader of the church, he says today, come to Jesus. Come to the living stone. And like living stones, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house. Our physical buildings might still be here. Our spiritual house, however, that is in need of rebuilding. Now let's unpack St. Peter is saying for a minute. He starts off by saying, come to Jesus. That's the first thing, and it's crucial. An encounter with Jesus is absolutely necessary. C'est l'incontournable, we say. The non-negotiable of rebuilding the church. The bride needs to know the groom. And encountering and knowing Jesus means getting to know his bride, the church. In fact, it means becoming part of the church. And the second thing that Peter says in that letter is that the church is alive. It isn't a building. It's made up of living stones, he says. And those living stones are constantly being built up. They're constantly growing and changing, changing to become more fully the bride of Christ. Now, perfection is only for once we're all in heaven. Until then, the church, you and me, we're always in need of being built up. And that brings me to the next thing I want to say about St. Peter's letter. He is not addressing it to priests. He's not addressing it to the institutional church. At the beginning of his letter, he very purposefully addresses it to all people in the church. The church is all of us, and we must all take our part in it. I heard a talk from Father James Mallon recently, and he compared the church's cultural mindset to a soccer game. Well, Father James was born in Scotland, so he probably said football. But regardless, he said, for too long, we've seen the church as if the clergy were the players on the pitch. Yeah, I got that right. That's the right terminology, on the pitch. He said, the clergy are the ones moving the ball around, trying to set plays, looking for opportunities, and hopefully scoring now and again. I'd add that it's soccer, so maybe nobody is scoring at all. And everybody's kind of weirdly satisfied with a tie. But in his analogy, the laity, the congregation, they're the fans in the church. They're cheering on their team. They're singing songs and cheering a good play, booing a bad one. They think that by showing up and paying the admission and buying the merch, they can therefore sit back and hope for a win. And meanwhile, they get to criticize or laud the play, the players, the coach, or whatever, as long as it doesn't really mean that they have to get involved. But Father James says that what the church ought to be, was meant to be, and maybe it was when Peter wrote his letter, the church is a soccer match where the fans are actually on the field. Each and every baptized member is playing in the game. They're the ones setting the plays, defending, moving the ball, scoring the goals. The clergy are meant to be the coaches or the manager or whatever it is in soccer. The clergy are meant to train the players, to establish the game plan, to help figure out who's best at playing which position. In short, setting up the congregation for the win. But it's up to the people to play the game. And I think that is the shift in mindset that we need right now. We don't need a new program in our church. We don't need to change our doctrine or moral teaching. It's the culture that's been disrupted during this time. And it's the church's culture that needs disruption, that needs to change. And what do I mean by that culture? I mean the mindset that it's, oh, well, it's Father's job to pray, to run the operations of the church. It's really only Father, the clergy's job to talk about faith. The congregation just has to show up once a week, hope the homily doesn't put you to sleep, and then put a couple of bucks in the correct collection plate to keep the lights on. To be honest, we the clergy have probably structured things that way too, because that was the culture we wanted as well. But you are the players. Your role is way more important than mine. If the crowd, the real crowd, the world that stands ready to boo or cheer us, if they are going to be won over, if they are ever going to want to be part of our team, my role is to set you up for success. But every baptized member of the church is needed on the pitch, using their skills and talents and gifts to help win the match. To get away from the sports analogies, Soren Kierkegaard, the famous Danish philosopher, said, people have an idea that the preacher is an actor on a stage, and they're the critics, blaming or praising him. What they don't know is that they are the actors on the stage. He, the preacher, is merely the prompter standing in the wings, reminding them of their lost lines. It seems to me we've lost an awful lot of our lines. Each and every one of us, because of our baptism, is called to play a role in the church. And it isn't to sit in the audience. Last week I quoted Pope Francis in Joy of the Gospel. He also says in another paragraph there that the Holy Spirit gives every member of the church different gifts and talents. He says these gifts are meant to renew and build up the church. They are not an inheritance safely secured and entrusted to a small group for safekeeping. He goes on to say that when we place Christ at the center of our lives, those gifts are unleashed to serve the mission of the church. It's then that we can truly find the role we've been cast to play in this great drama of life. And I'll tell you, all the work we've done at St. Ignatius over the past few years, it's all the work leading up to this pandemic that's allowed us to shift gears during this time and still focus on our mission. It's not because we hired people to be sound and video technicians. You know, we didn't hire people who had all these skills with Zoom for the Alpha, the Connect groups, or sacramental prep. We didn't recruit a band who knew how to play worship songs while miles apart, or a Catch the Wave leader who wanted to be a YouTube star. That's not what we set out to do when we hired our staff. All those people, both the staff and the volunteers alike, they're focused on the mission. The mission, as St. Peter says in his letter, to proclaim the mighty acts of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. And so those staff and volunteers, they don't care what their job description says. They care about the overall mission of the parish. The mission is way more important than the methods. So they shift and they adapt and they learn and they grow. They unleash their gifts in whatever way they were called to, however it was needed. And I've been so impressed, been so inspired by them. But when I think about how do we get so lucky to have all these great people engaged in our parish, I realize it isn't all that complicated. It's not easy, but it isn't complicated. We simply do what St. Peter asks. We simply do what Pope Francis asks. And just about every pope before him, by the way, also asks. We try to simply bring people to that encounter with Jesus and his church, with the bride. And when they make the choice to follow Jesus, well, then their gifts are unleashed. They let themselves be the living stones to build up our church. They have a burning desire to see others brought into the church and into an encounter with Jesus. They want everyone to know just how amazing it is to let yourself be built up. It isn't a sacrifice for them. The church's mission is their mission. And they won't be stopped by old methods and old models. Just like the women who organized our COVID response initiative, matching people online, or the couple who started a Bible study on Zoom, or those who called everyone for whom we didn't have an email to check in and offer to pray for them over the phone. That's how we rebuild the church. It's not how I rebuild the church. It's not how the clergy rebuilds the church. It's by letting the baptized use the gifts and the talents and the skills that they possess in abundance to become the living stones. It isn't better catechesis or more moral teaching. It's restructuring the church around the idea that only by creating missionary disciples can the church fulfill its mission. Missionary disciples, ready to learn new skills and to take new chances, willing to risk failure at times because they know the mission of the church. They want to be part of that mission. And they know that Jesus can transform everyone's life. And they want that for each and every one of you. You know, I often say that we need to not just believe in Jesus, but to believe Jesus, to actually believe the words he speaks to us. Well, here's one for you. Jesus today, in the gospel today, actually says that we're going to do greater things than him. He says, "Very truly I tell you, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact, will do greater works than these." Do you believe that? Do you believe that Jesus wants us to do even greater works than he's done? That's a big one to swallow. But Jesus says it. "Very truly, I tell you," he says, "you will do greater works." I believe we can do greater works than even Jesus did. I believe that is how incredible, how awesome the church can become. We can do them when we encounter Jesus. We can do them with the Holy Spirit unleashing our gifts. We can be amazing. We can be incredible. We can bring healing and wholeness, peace and joy to our broken world. Our parish has begun that in some small way. As we go forward, we're going to lean into that even more. My job is to set you up for success, to help you unleash your gifts, because you are the living stones that are built up into the spiritual house that is the church.